Today, you might not be who you wish you were or who you thought that you were yesterday. You might be the forgotten pea below the fridge or the spider gnome that crawls through the wrinkles in your forehead and chokes on the invisible bar lines that make up your teeth. Today, you might think of losing your identity so miserably it feels like a memory, or maybe you feel like your own enemy, alien in your skin. Loved ones attached from the bodies you remember them living in, you feel thin, like straw, like incapable. Against the rage, against gravity, you feel printed between parentheses, you feel diseased, like curled up ball. Like never want to unwind, like feeling the weight of far too much too soon today. Your soul, which has been so quiet it seems like it is fading, will let words put it to sleep. Tonight, you will repeat fearless, fearless, fearless with every flinch of paper cut on your sliced cheeks. And tomorrow, you will still not believe the words fearless as you spit them in the mirror. But this feeling will seem a little bit clearer. Tomorrow, you will rage. You will explode through your veins against this small cyclops, this invisible vulture, this tiny bracket that separated you and your tomorrow. You will accept this quietness as your own, the religious whisper saying, all will be okay, all will be okay. Tomorrow, your rusty music will sound sweet. Tomorrow, you will laugh, and just for a second, it will resonate your DNA until your chromosomes convince themselves that suffering is merely a symphony conducted by the epitome of triumph. Tomorrow, the noise under the fridge crawling in the corners of your ears, shadowing in the syllables of your mind, will finally give you pause so you can hear yourself and not your yesterday when you say, I love you. Tomorrow, you will triumph the small pea feeling, and little by little, you will grow into a forest. Tomorrow, your foreign fingertips will create a volcanic clay sculpture. Your rubbed red eyes will sparkle fire in your love soul. Your body will run marathons faster than yesterday can catch up to you. I promise you, today is only a cunning cut on your capacity, only a small stab on your capability, only a small stab on who you will be and who you are already. Today, there is might in the strongest sense of the phrase, and tomorrow there will be more.
You just heard a poem written by and performed by Angelica Poversky called Today You Might. That is my favorite poem of hers, though it doesn't even come close to covering the diversity and power and hilarity of many of her other poems, but stay tuned and you will hear much more about her experience as a poet and using poetry to create change in the world. I'm your host, Emma Ng, and you're listening to Goody at CITR 101.9 FM, playing from the UBC Point Grey campus on unceded Musqueam territory. At Goody, we talk to the do-gooders who are using business, innovation, and creativity to create positive change in the world. Today we are talking to Angelica Poversky, a spoken word poet, media, and performance artist. Her work is incredibly diverse, from poems about nature to what is to be human to gender and social issues. She can capture the exact existential thoughts you had last night in the shower, or the beauty of a landscape so well it makes you shiver. She also writes poems that are full of wit and bound to make a laugh escape from even the tightest of lips. And speaking of which, she has also performed clown and acting pieces in the combination of everything in between with the Tiny Tricycle Poets. Angelica is Vancouver's Top 24 Under 24, a TD Scholar, Richmond's 30 Under 30, and she has performed at the 2017 UN Peacekeeping Defense Ministerial National Culture Days and the Top 25 Under 25 Canadian Environmentalist Awards, as well as countless others. So this is kind of a lot. How did it all get started?
Well, it just kind of accumulates over time, I guess. But yeah, I guess I started doing everything probably in like 2012-ish, definitely when I was in high school. But yes, when I was younger, for sure, I started. Maybe when I was like 13, I started to write.
So what was your first exposure to poetry?
Well, I used to write a lot of like poems just in my notebook or whatever, and my mom would tell me to submit them to literary competitions, and then eventually I would win things, and then people would tell me I was good at it. So I was like, okay, I guess I'm good at this. So I just kind of kept doing it.
So who is the first poet that you read, if you remember?
Honestly, I don't remember the first poet I read, but I remember the first time I heard spoken word. And I pretended that I already knew what spoken word was because I had already started performing my poetry out loud at that point. And then somebody was like, oh, do you know what spoken word is? And I was like, of course. And then I heard classic, like, Shane Coisan poem that was that really famous bullying one that he has to this day. That was my first one I think I heard. And that just really changed me after that. I was like, whoa, that has so much power, way more power than anything I was doing. And yeah, so it really captivated me. Yeah.
Had you read much poetry before writing your own?
Honestly, I never read that much poetry, and I still don't actually, like, I take that back. I actually read a lot of poetry. I guess when you said reading poetry, I imagined myself like reading books and books of poetry, which I usually, all the poetry that I read is like online. Or, you know, in chapbook form, which I just for some reason didn't associate with as, like, reading a massive manuscript or anything like that. But, yeah, at that time, I definitely wasn't super exposed to a lot of, like, the cool written poetry that I'm into now. It was mostly stuff for, like, my English classes, which is also sweet, but I'm definitely not much of, like, a literature nut or anything like that, but I thought I was. So. But, yeah, I figured out some more modern, more... in my opinion, hip poets to follow as kind of time went on.
So you were an adolescent writing poetry, and that seems like kind of a vulnerable position to be in. What was it like showing your friends, your peers, or other people your poetry?
Yeah, I guess I really didn't write a lot of poetry about my own personal issues until I got older, because I think I just didn't have enough life experience, really. But, you know, I would write a lot about just, like, things that I observed or things I saw and stuff like that. So it didn't really take a lot of vulnerability at that age for me. I mean, it did in the way of just, like, performing in front of people and, you know, being nervous about sharing your stuff or whatever. But it was never from a place of like, oh my God, everybody's going to know like who I like now that I've read this. Or it was always just kind of like weird and abstract and like the trees falling and the bridge is beautiful on the other side or, you know, whatever. So yeah, it was a lot of vulnerability in the sense of just getting out there and trying something new, but not so much in like the content, I guess.
So what was the first time you performed poetry like? Where were you? Do you remember what poem you even performed? And what was that like?
Yeah, the first time I ever performed, I mean, I'm not sure if this is the exact first time, but the first memory I have is me at the Vancouver Public Library. I was part of the summer camp for writing for kids. Yvonne Coyote.
I was part of that.
No too. Way, yeah. Really? Oh my God. Yeah, I was. It was super fun. I really liked it. And then at the end, there's a showcase that you could sign up for. And then I read one of my poems, and it was really exciting for me. And I kind of got addicted to the rush ever since that point.
Well, that's a good thing to be addicted to. So your poetry deals with a lot of topics, one of which, and how I came to know your poetry, is the topic of environmentalism. How did you come to have an interest in that?
In that stage of my life, I was very much interested in like a lot of the things that were going on and like trying to like engage politically and stuff like that. So I would perform at kind of where I met you, like the Vancouver Sustainability Conference, and I did like the Earth Day Parade and just a lot of environmentalist events, because I really, and I still do feel, but maybe to a lesser extent than I did in the past, which was like, oh, you know, poetry can really make an impact on these issues, and like I can spread you know, my political message through this. Now I'm a little bit more like, I do think poetry can change the world for sure, but I don't necessarily think, I think it can change the world through a lot of different ways that I wasn't really, I guess, aware of back then. Mm-hmm. Like before, I was very much like, oh, I have to say my like political thing and then people will engage in that political action. But now I'm like, oh, there's a lot more like nuance of emotion and like human experience that I want to delve into and like connect with people in a really like vulnerable and like intimate way. Yeah. Instead of just like being like, oh, stuff and recycle or compost or, you know, whatever.
So where did that interest of social justice or environmental justice or any of that come from?
Yeah, definitely. I guess it all came from just me seeing, I mean, there was a lot of stuff. Like when I was younger, I was part of this environmental ambassador program and stuff like that. So I would do workshops talking about energy. And honestly, all of these things just kind of happened to me. Like I was just kind of interested and then I learned more about it. And then I was like, oh, this is really, really cool. But definitely I found that whenever I would watch like a documentary on veganism or, you know, engage in any kind of art form about environmentalism, I'd be like, oh, wow, you know, that's super intense. And that has really captivated me. And I think that interest of how the art described these like social justice issues and made it so, so intense for me was like something that I thought I could do.
So from these interests, you founded Arts in the Park. Can you tell us a little bit more about that festival?
Yeah. So in 2013, I was part of this youth leadership program called Get Outs IBC. And then basically at the end of the program, we got a little bit of money to put our own project forward to get people to go outside. And then I was thinking of a lot of things, but really at that point, I really wanted to get people outside to enjoy art. So I called up one of my friends that I knew was involved, and she's produced some of her own events, and her name was Emily. Well, it continues to be Emily. Her name continues to be Emily. And so we put together this festival, and we invited a bunch of people to come and perform, a bunch of my friends that were living in Richmond at that time. And they were all young, and it was like just the super youth-led event to get people to just be in the park and just like get off their phones and, you know, put that garbage away and like all that stuff. But yeah, and then we did it again another year in the following as well. Yeah.
So being so young, did you have to talk to any adults? What was that process like?
Yeah, I did have to talk to adults. Actually, I do remember feeling a lot of ageism. And I still feel that sometimes when I am producing my events currently. Like, definitely I'm usually the youngest person involved in any kind of event that I do. And that still has continued. And I do feel like, especially at that age when I was 15. I was 15. And yeah, there's a lot of people that were very skeptical if I was able to produce that kind of event. They thought that it wouldn't go through. But on the other hand, I did have a lot of support from adults that really did believe in me and like wanted to put that together. And then I stayed really good friends with those people. And yeah, they really helped guide me and supported me. But yeah, even then it was quite difficult to convince people to like let me do this thing because they were like, you're too young to know what you're doing. Yeah.
So having organized an arts event so young, you have also branched out and used that experience to connect with other youth within the forms of media. You've produced the Richmond Youth Media Festival and also facilitate workshops and writing workshops for youth. What has that been
yeah,
like?
Yeah, totally. I love helping people write more or, you know, find their poetry voice or not their poetry voice, their voice, just in general. I have workshops that I do with the Tiny Tricycle Poets at the Roundhouse Community Center, and we do them, every 3 months or so we'll have one and people can just come. It's super non-committal, super drop-in. Anybody can be there, but we teach like a variety of things from like clown to how to, you know, be more improv oriented in your craft, to how to incorporate more comedy into your poetry, all that sort of stuff. And yeah, that's the kind of work that I really enjoy doing, because for me it's like it's not really work, like it's just like we're playing. Also, we don't get paid for it. that also helps with it not being work.
So for a lot of youth, it's probably also their first time seeing some of this art.
Yeah, totally.
So, yeah, have there been any interesting reactions?
Yeah, definitely. It's cool because a lot of people don't expect to enjoy what we do, like, because we're super, we do a lot of really, really weird stuff, and, like, actually, we're about to perform at the Vancouver Art Gallery, and it's, like, an event geared towards kids, and it was just recently that we realized a lot of our performance seems like it would be very kid-oriented, and it's just, like, very, like, I'm a tree, you know? Like, I'm a raccoon. Like, it's just super, like, you know, goofy and stuff like that. But honestly, I think that a lot of people are surprised to find it super liberating and super fun, and, you know, you can just let loose and be creative and, like, allow yourself to go there. And, yeah, so we hope to be able to facilitate those kinds of things for people.
So your performing partners are also your partners from a group called the Tiny Tricycle Poets, and that's just a poetry group of you guys. So what do you guys do, and who's in that group?
So the Tiny Tricycle Poets are comprised of myself and Emma Field and Andrew Warner. They're two of my best friends. And basically, we're just like this clowning poetry comedy collective, and we do different shows all the time. We do the show called Between Three Wheels, where we interview a poet. It's kind of like Between Two Ferns. Like, even though Between Two Ferns is already like a parody show, like, we further that and like became more of a parody, and we like bring a poet on and we interview them. But yeah, we basically just kind of perform. We do our thing. It's a mix of everything. People are always kind of like weirded out by it at first, and then they grow to like it. And then we just came back from a tour. We went around the country and performed at different poetry shows and like galleries and festivals. And yeah, now we're back. And
so if you are curious, you can actually find their whole show on YouTube. And you can also enjoy short little clips of poems. And I think they're definitely worth checking out. They're really funny, and I think it's great that there's so many funny poems, because I think that's something that people don't always realize about poetry, is that it can be funny. In the videos, they look like they're having a blast. So, Angelica, why do you love poetry?
It's something that I think my answer changes to that question all the time. Like, I was listening today to this new rapper that I just found on my like recommended YouTube page, and his style is very, very spoken wordy. I forget his name, but yeah, I just like binged and listened to like three of his albums, and like I was listening to him, and I was like, oh, this is why I love poetry. Just like the way that you can hear the intimacy of somebody's experience, you know? And I think that for so long, I think I was writing and I was so focused on like, oh, I need to have the best, you know, wittiness or the best, you know, word choice or the best rhyme here, the rhythm here has to be perfect or all these things. But honestly, like once you understand the techniques of how to make a poem and you understand like literary devices and all that stuff, and it starts to come more natural to you, at the end of the day, all that you really need to do is like not focus on those things, but just focus on like telling your truth and telling your story. And like for me, it's like the ability to hear other people's, like that is just the most beautiful part of it for me. It's just being able to like listen and be like, oh, we're all human, and like this is something that I really relate to and I didn't even have the words for, but somebody else like gifted me those. And it feels like an honor, you know, to have that. Yeah.
And you learned this craft mostly self-taught?
Yeah, definitely. I guess it was self-taught in a way, and then self-taught not in some ways. Like, a lot of it, like, you know, before really I started to get really into it, a lot of my English teachers would have, like, units on poetry and stuff like that. And that was pretty sweet. That was nice because it kind of guided me and, like, you know, I learned what literary devices are and similes and metaphors and, like, learning the words for these things that I kind of naturally was doing in my poems, but I didn't know what they were. And then even now, like, in university, even in my class, in media studies here, my professor, yeah, he was talking about metaphors in this really interesting way, and this idea of semiotics in this really interesting way. And even if we're not specifically talking about how that applies to poetry, it's like all of these like lessons that I get about other things often really make me influenced in the way that I write. But I do have like actual training from from clown school things I've done. And then I did some poetry and improv things with other people. Then I took some other just mentorship workshops constantly with R.C. Wislowski, who has been kind of my coach and my mentor. And currently I'm taking a poetry workshop online with this poet named Neri, and then her last name is very hard to pronounce. I think it's like Fatikovich.
So you've been to Clown College then?
Yeah, well, it wasn't, okay, well, I like to say that's Clown College just because it sounds better, but it was honestly, it was just like this, I think, 3-day or 5-day, honestly, I can't remember how many days I was in there, but it was this workshop series atop of this pizza parlor, and it was like this hot yoga, nudist hot yoga studio that was on top of this pizza parlor right beside this chicken factory in like the heart of East Van. And myself and Emma and Andrew actually were all part of that clown class, and that's how we all actually formed the Tiny Tricycle Poets. It was out of this series of learning and, you know, creativity and all that stuff, and we were part of that because we were all trying to get onto the youth poetry team that year, and our coach R.C. Wazlowski recommended that we go and do this workshop to help us become better poets, but ultimately just made us clowns, so there we go, yeah.
So going into university, how did you decide that you would focus on arts and maybe even poetry and become a poet?
Yeah, totally. Well, I was actually really nervous because I'm in media studies right now, and I was really nervous about following that trajectory and like maybe losing my poetry stuff because I thought I'd be too busy or, you know, whatever. But honestly, I've just found every single way possible to incorporate what I do in school or at my job with what I want to do with my craft, which has been really nice. Yeah.
So you just told your parents, I think I'm going to be a poet.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're really supportive for sure. Like my mom is definitely always suggesting that I apply for things. Like she'll find festivals for me to apply for. She's really down with it. I think that they often are like, I think they really like what I do, even if they don't necessarily fully understand it. But then my mom recently came to one of my shows and, you know, and she like hasn't just come to like a full show of mine for like a really long time. So it was really nice that she came and she was like, whoa, like that was really cool. Like I was surprised, but I'm really into it. And, you know, and they've always been supportive and stuff like that. So
I found for young artists, sometimes it's hard to receive support when going into the arts. What kind of advice would you give to a young artist in any profession?
It's always hard. And I find that, you know, all the time you're faced with like so much rejection and like so many reasons not to do the thing that you do. Like I could go on and on about how, like, you know, I think that the further I go, the more reasons there are for me to not do what I do because, you know, life happens and it keeps happening and it keeps telling you to stop. But honestly, if you just keep your eye on your dream and, you know, eventually people will believe in your dream too, eventually, and that happens and it starts to really mess you up because you're, I was about to say, yeah, just believe in your dream. People will believe in your dream too. And really that'll happen maybe like 10 years after you started. You know what I mean? I feel like it's only just happening for me now where people are like, oh, I get it. Like what, I see what you're doing. But even then it's like, you know, 3% of people or like even less than that. But, you know, it grows. It grows over time. It's just a lot of persistence and perseverance.
Yeah. Yeah. So in your poetry, you have talked about environmental issues, but are now talking more about sexism, feminism, different sorts of social issues. Why do you think poetry is such a great vehicle for these messages?
More recently, I've been really focusing on feminism, and I think that that's just really important for me because, you know, I'm a woman, so I just, like, things happen to me and they affect me and then I write about it. It's basically kind of how it goes, and hopefully, you know, can make other women or, you know, even men or other genders, like, feel empowered by what I have to say and, like, you know, rethink their own ways of tackling the world. Like, I think that women are really taught to be submissive or, like, meek or, you know, weak in a lot of situations. And, like, I feel like for a while, you know, that stuff is internalized in you and you find a way to combat that. And that's what I hope to do. It's kind of like a lot of my poetry has become kind of like a retaliation against that. It's like, oh, look, this is me finding my power.
So those poems are both entertaining and very impactful. One you can check out is called That's What She Said by the Tiny Tricycle Poets, which is Angelica's group. and you've got a lot of things going on. What are you up to now?
Coming up, we've got this performance at the Vancouver Art Gallery on Saturday and Sunday. So that's what I'm doing. And then after that, I've got another thing. Oh, yeah, Richmond World Festival is happening, which I'm performing and also doing like a little media art installation, also half organizing. So, yeah, things are moving for me. But also, I just kind of want to get it all out before school starts because yeah. I know I'll be able to do just as much as. But
so what's motivating all these projects?
Yeah, I guess honestly, it's just like
pure passion,
pure passion, and like some fear. Also, I feel like a lot of me is like, oh, I have to do these things because like, what if I just die? Like, you know what I mean? I feel like that's my most subconscious thought is like, oh, something might happen and then I won't be able to do these things anymore. So I got to do them. But also just like, you know, I'm up at 1 a.m. and I'm thinking about these things and then I just write poetry to cope with them. Or it's definitely something I've been thinking about just because I was updating my website just today, actually, in the morning. And I was like thinking about those, like, damn, like I have done a lot of things. And it's like some of these things, like it's just weird how like things kind of happen. And then I'm always like, yes, I want to put my entire soul into that. And then you just keep sacrificing your time and your energy for things. And then eventually you see like, oh, this was kind of like interesting because that led to this and that led to that. And like, you know, there's some payoff and there's some gratitude. And
so are you just living by the thoughts that you could die any minute and that's what motivates you? Or do you have any specific words that you're currently living by or mottos or anything?
I guess so. Like, I don't think I'm going to die as much, but I guess just this idea of like, I want to be able to give the world what I think I can, and I want to extract those things from myself and like weed them all out. And like, honestly, a lot of the times that I write or do things is because I feel like I just like I have to, or yeah. And if I don't, I just feel like I get obsessed with it and I'm just like, oh, I need to. So a lot of it is that like compulsive, like, oh, I might just like die and never be able to do this again. Or, you know, I don't know. It's just like, I wish I could say like, it's because I want to spread my love and like my warmth. But a lot of it is just like this intense, like adrenaline that I have. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. So where can people follow all these adventures, tours, performances?
Yeah, I guess this is my chance to plug all my things. So I've got all the social medias at Angelica Faversky on most things. Also have a website. Also, yeah, my Facebook page. I definitely do like share a lot of things. I also vlog with the Tiny Tricycle Poets on our tours. They
love
get
that.
Like, yeah, it's really fun. We just like laugh together and yeah, record our performances sometimes and do weird things. Like you could see us promoting our tour through Tinder through our vlogs and all that stuff.
Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. It's been good. Music is Cheery Monday by Kevin McLeod.
AMS Food Bank. Your access to money during the studies at UBC will most likely be limited, but it is a priority of the AMS Food Bank to ensure your access to food is not. The AMS Food Bank provides emergency food relief 7 days a week for all UBC students. To volunteer with the Food Bank or for inquiries about how to take advantage of the services provided, contact them at foodbank@ams.ubc.ca. For more information, find the AMS Food Bank on Facebook or feel free to visit anytime across from the Wellness Center and Sprouts.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosions!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band, swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.